Blessings, everybody. This is Dale. Thank you so much for joining with me today on the Word Podcast. We're continuing in 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 1, the story of David. This one is sort of interesting. Verse 1 says this, "Now, a worthless fellow happened to be there, whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjaminite. And he blew the trumpet and said, 'We have no portion in David, nor do we have inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel.'" So remember what just happened previously was that David was seeking to unify his kingdom with Israel, the northern part of the kingdom, in Judah, his homeland. And everything had gone well with him. Now, all of a sudden, this guy pops up, Sheba, the son of Bichri. He's always described that way. And he's described as a worthless fellow. Well, that can't be good, can it? And what does he do? He literally blows a trumpet, makes a proclamation, declares it, and says, "Hey, we don't have anything to do with David. We don't want to have anything to do with the inheritance of the son of Jesse. Forget this. Every man to his tents, O Israel." In other words, y'all rally behind me. Watch what they did. Verse 2. "So all the men of Israel withdrew from following David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah remained steadfast to their king from the Jordan even to Jerusalem." So apparently those in the northern kingdom followed this guy. They withdrew from David and they started following him. Verse 3. "Then David came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took the 10 women, the concubines who had been left to keep the house, and placed them under guard and provided them with sustenance, but did not go into them. So they were shut up until the day of their death, living as widows." So what is that all about? Well, remember what Absalom did when Absalom came in? He asked for advice. And one of the advisors said, "Hey, go in there and lie with your father's concubines, and that will seal the power deal here, right?" And he did. And they put a tent on top of the roof where all of Israel could see him doing this, going into the tents and going into the concubines. Well, David's back. Absalom is dead. But these concubines, these 10 women, are still there. David had left them there to take care of the house. So what he did, he placed them under guard, and he provided for them. Gave him food, clothing, shelter, place to live. But he did not have anything else to deal with them. And they were shut up until the day of their death, living as widows. Now, that shut up, that's interesting. Does that mean that they were incarcerated to a degree, you know, imprisoned somehow? Because he placed them under guard. He provided for them with, you know, their sustenance, what they would need. So was it that kind of thing, or was it the fact that they were widows? He's treating them as widows because Absalom is dead. Okay? He's treating them as widows and that they were not allowed to marry. It's probably a combination of both these things, that they were probably put under what we would call nowadays like a house arrest. And they had to live out the rest of their natural lives this way. Yeah, it sort of breaks your heart, doesn't it? And then verse 4. "Then the king said to Amasa," remember he's the one that's over his army, "call out the men of Judah for me within 3 days and be present here yourself." So Amasa went to call out the men of Judah, but he delayed longer than the set time which he had appointed him. So David tells him, "Hey, get the guys together, rally the troops within 3 days. He did it, but it took him longer than 3 days. And it says that he delayed longer. Okay, not necessarily the idea that it was something outside of his control, but that he just took longer. Then verse 6, "And David said to Abishai, 'Now, Sheba, the son of Bichri, will do us more harm than Absalom. Take your Lord's servants and pursue him so that he does not find for himself fortified cities and escape from our sight.'" So David's telling Abishai, "Hey, this guy's going to cause us more harm than Absalom. So go, take my army, go after him, and make sure you get to him before he gets in a fortified city and gets anchored into something." So, verse 7, "Joab's men," notice who men they are, "Joab's men, the army, went out after him, along with the Cherethites, and the Pelethites, and all the mighty men. And they went out from Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. Verse 8. When they were at the large stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa came to meet them. Now Joab was dressed in his military attire, and over it was a belt, with a sword in his sheath fastened at his waist. And as he went forward, it fell out. The sheath fell out that had been fastened at his waist with the sword in it. Verse 9, Joab said to Amasa, "Is it well with you, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him, which was apparently the manner of the day. Okay, so he grabs him to greet him, to kiss him. Verse 10, but Amasa was not on guard against the sword which was in Joab's hand. So he struck him in the belly with it and poured out his inward parts on the ground and did not strike him again, and he died. Then Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued Sheba, the son of Bichri. Yeah, this Joab character, we're seeing all sorts of curious things about him. One second he looks like the great white knight. Next second he looks like the devil incarnate, right? You see a lot of different things when you pay attention to him. Verse 11. Now there stood by him one of Joab's young men and said, "Whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, let him follow Joab." And so now they're calling for all the soldiers to follow Joab rather than Amasa. Well, there was a problem. Verse 12, but Amasa lay wallowing in his blood in the middle of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa from the highway into the field and threw a garment over him when he saw that everyone who came by him stood still. As soon as he removed from the highway, all the men passed on after Joab to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. And so Joab comes in. Amasa had been given this assignment by David. Joab had been demoted, and Amasa had been put in his place because of what Joab had done to Absalom. And David did this. The king has every right to do that. Okay, Joab's hacked off about it. He comes along, literally kills Amasa. He's laying there in the road. Now they want the soldiers to follow Joab, but they're not too sure because their leader's laying there dead. Somebody comes along, drags the body off the side of the road, covers it up, and they all go, "Well, yeah, I guess he's dead. Let's go. We'll follow you now." I mean, that's literally what is going on here. Later on, we'll see that God describes David as a man of war. And we can see why, right? Also, we're seeing things that were already prophesied. Remember how the Lord has spoke, I guess it was through Nathan the prophet, to David, that the sword would never depart from his family, that there would be this type of stuff that would be going on. Well, again, I'm Dale. Thank you for your time. We'll see the rest of the story in the next episode. Goodbye.